Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I want to start this morning with a story. And it's not a joke. It's a true story. Back in 2005, so that was 12 years ago, I had a friend who was going to our center when we were over at Woodruff back then. And he wanted to meet with me, and he wanted to share one of his deepest, darkest secrets. Now, some of you may recall that 2005 was a very special year for some people because that was the year that Dancing with the Stars made its big debut on television, and it was a big hit. It had been a big hit over in England and Europe, but it had moved to the U.S. And so he met with me, and he told me that a lot of his friends got together to watch it every week. He was a gay man who lived here in Midtown. And the ballroom dance craze was starting to pick up, so the clubs were going crazy with dancing. You know, the guys loved it. All over the country, you know, even the clubs here in Atlanta. The problem was he couldn't dance. That was his deep, dark secret. And which, as deep, dark secret goes, I didn't think was all that bad, but it was important to him. Okay? So he said that he had never learned, and he was afraid that his friends would make fun of him if they found out. Now, when I say he couldn't dance, he could thrash around on the floor, you know, with somebody else over there and pretend to be dancing as long as he wasn't hanging on to anybody. Or he could sort of slow dance and carry on a conversation, hoping his dance partner wouldn't notice that he was stepping on his feet. But whenever a dance required actual steps that were pre-planned and executed as a couple, he would sort of ease on over to the part of the room where all the other non-dancers were carrying on these political and philosophical discussions so they wouldn't have to get on the floor and embarrass themselves either. So, to his credit, and with a little encouragement from me after we talked a couple times, he decided to do something about it. He started taking private ballroom dance lessons from a dance instructor in Buckhead who gave lessons in his basement. So he started taking lessons once a week. He had a woman friend whose husband hated to dance, and she loved it. So she went to the lessons with him and went out and got into practice. And lo and behold, he was just trying to get it so he could be good enough. But he found out that he loved it. He absolutely loved it. He loved the rhythm of the movements. He loved the steps and the spins and the dips and all the real hardcore ballroom dancing stuff. So he started going out. Once he felt comfortable, he started going out with friends and dancing at the clubs, which is how he met the guy who is now his husband. And one of their favorite things to do together almost every weekend is to go out and dance. So, pretty story, right? Anyway, the question that came up for me was, why did it take him 48 years, that's how old he was when we were talking, to experience something that today brings him so much joy? Because that's something a lot of us do in all the different areas of our life. We put off doing things that could bring us joy or happiness or pleasure or fun for reasons that don't make a whole lot of sense as we look back. Now, they may have made sense at the time. Maybe we were too busy. Maybe money was tight. Maybe we had family commitments that we couldn't do these things. But when we stop and examine our reasons from that place inside of us that loves to play and live and explore and create and all those different things, we find that the only thing that keeps us from trying something new that we might enjoy is what we've been listening to out there instead of listening to what is in here. We've been trying to adapt our steps to other people's music instead of stepping out and joyfully, fearlessly, and outrageously, just like Ellen, dancing to music of our own. Now, if you think about it, stay with me here. Dancing is a great metaphor for living. And when I say living, I don't just mean breathing and taking up space, as some people think. I mean living the way that our spirit is meant to live. And at the very least, that means being present all the time, being aware, giving and receiving love, following our dreams, fulfilling our desires, and using our God-given talents, right? That's living, all right? That's the only kind of living that really matters. Maybe just for starters, we could actually start to look at the entire world as a giant dance floor. Okay, can you do that? A giant dance floor, all right? Shakespeare said all the world is a stage and each of us is an actor on that stage. So it's not that big a stretch to say that the world is a dance floor and each one of us is either on it or around it. Okay? So stick with me on that. Now, just like actors are sometimes on stage and sometimes off, sometimes we're dancing and sometimes we're sitting down. And when we're sitting down, there could be a lot of reasons for it. Maybe we're tired because we've been dancing for the last hour and a half nonstop. It could be because we don't like the music, which is fine because not everybody likes the same kind of music. All right. It could be that we just need to rest a little bit before we get out there on the floor again. But the people that I'm curious about when we look at life as a dance are the people who seem to be sitting on the sidelines permanently. Back in junior high school, we had a name for those people. You know what they called them? Wallflowers, okay? I'm sure that wasn't a wallflower who said that. That was a person who called them wallflowers, okay? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who don't necessarily enjoy sitting out every dance. That's just what they do. It's just what they do. Now, maybe it's because they never learned how to dance, like my friend. Maybe they just don't like music. There's some people like that. Maybe they're mad at their partner, so they're pouting over there in the corner, or maybe they're afraid they'll look silly and everybody's going to laugh. But for whatever reason, what they do, these people, is they sit on the outside and they criticize the people who are actually dancing, or they criticize the music, or they criticize the venue, but they don't participate. They don't participate. Now, that's one group of people. Then there are the people who are actually out in the world or out on the dance floor, okay? Now, some of the people out in the dance floor, and if you sit and watch, it's kind of fun. I love to people watch, as some of you do, I'm sure. Some of them are showing off their style, you know, Saturday Night Fever kind of stuff, trying to get everybody to notice how good they are. Some of them think they're showing off their style, even though they don't have any, okay? There's people like that. And some of them are dancing beautifully simply because they love being out on the floor. They're just out there because they love it. Now, a few people are dancing by themselves, sort of swaying to the music with their eyes closed. Some people are dancing with someone, but they're still by themselves. They're totally self-contained. And some people, and these are the people I love to watch, are so connected. They're like one body, okay? Absolutely eye to eye, heart to heart, totally connected while they dance. Those people are beautiful to watch, all right? Now, that's the people. Then there are all the different dance moves, okay? Some people have perfect rhythm, while other people use the music as a suggestion rather than, you know, their body. Some people are very serious about it, doing the specific steps to the rumba and the cha-cha or disco or the swing or whatever it happens to be. Other people are laughing and they're kind of making up their own steps. That's kind of the category that I fall into. Some people change partners every dance, always searching for the perfect partner, but they always find a flaw in whoever they're with. Some people stick with the one that brought them, even though they don't like them, because they're afraid of being alone. All right? Now, of course, there are some unwritten rules to dancing. All right? You have to learn them sort of by, you know, practice and everything, because people are always coming and going in between songs or during songs. And these are rules like when the music changes, everybody changes with it. Okay, you got to do the kind of dancing that's going on with the music that's playing. Another rule is no one dances until the music starts playing, and when the music stops, everybody goes home. That's another unwritten rule. But now I want you to picture something. I was kind of laying out a scenario there. Picture a person walking onto the dance floor, headphone in their ears, attached to an iPod or whatever, and they start dancing to whatever music is playing in their headphones, okay? Whatever it is, Dancing Queen, Moves Like Jagger, whatever it happens to be, okay? They're only dancing to songs that they have chosen and that they actually love. And then another person comes out to the dance floor, not too close to them, but in that general area, with their headphones on, and they start dancing to their own music. Each one of them sort of weaving around with the other dancers who are dancing to the music that's playing over the speakers, all right? And they're not upset that they're different. They're just accepting each other wherever they happen to be. Now, what's interesting is the other people on the dance floor will start to get upset, okay? They say, who do these people think they are? Don't they realize they're supposed to be dancing to the music that's playing? That's why we're out here. So they can respond. Maybe they leave the floor angry at the people who are already out there. Maybe they try and stop the dancers from dancing on the floor. They try to kick them off. Who do you think would enjoy the evening more? The people that are dancing on their own or the people who are upset at the people who are dancing on their own? Now, I realize I'm beating this analogy to death, okay? But it's really too good to pass up because dancing, along with music, is one of the oldest art forms in the human experience. Because just like living, dancing requires the dancer to be involved. In fact, the dancer is the art, just like you and I are life. Life is not a thing out there that we participate in. Life is what we are. And every different style of dancing is a very special kind of movement. Movement is one of the most powerful expressions of life that we have, beginning with the movement of a child in the mother's womb to her heartbeat, which is where dancing to drums obviously evolved, to the end of our life when movement ceases completely, and we call that death. That's how we define it. No more movement inside or out. Now, I've got a book at home. I've actually got a lot of books at home, but I have one book at home that I went back to look at with this, and it's filled with these beautiful photographs of people all over the world dancing and moving, and the title of the book is Dancing, the Pleasure, Power, and Art of Movement. And in this book, the artist writes, he's got paragraphs along with all these different beautiful pictures, and he says, the impulse to move is the raw material that cultures shape into evocative sequences of physical activity that we call dance, and this phenomenon is universal. But then he says, to question or to belittle other people's dances is to challenge their right to be themselves. And he goes on to say that this can lead to things like anger, contempt, or even violence. Once again, if we substitute the word life for dance, the result's very similar. Now, in today's world, we are all beginning to realize that criticizing or condemning other people for the way they live can have some pretty serious consequences. I was writing this and going back over it this morning, and I was looking at the news, and I realized that this weekend is the one-year anniversary from Orlando, the Pulse nightclub, where people were dancing joyfully, and someone who could not stand seeing other people dancing and being happy for whatever cultural, religious reasons created a very terrible and tragic act. That's how far this can go. I mean, we have to realize that besides dancing, we express ourselves in a lot of different ways. We express ourselves, our own uniqueness, in the language we use, in the religion we choose to practice, and how we choose to practice it. All right, we do it in the clothes we wear, the people we love, whether we are gay, straight, or whatever it happens to be, the work that we do, and a whole lot of other ways. But when we, for some reason, we or someone decides that our thinking or doing or being things is either the right answer or the only answer for other people, we're not only criticizing them, we're criticizing the unique disparity, the broadness of life itself. Because life has no one single answer. Life does not have one way of doing things. Life is infinite variety, even within a specific species. Doug was talking about that. What if everything was the same? I mean, if you go to the botanical gardens for the roses, even in the same variety, the same species of rose, every single one of them is different. Every blade of grass, every snowflake, every grain of sand, even the things that are what we call the same, are completely different from every other one. So in the same way, even if we're all doing the same dance, we're all doing it just a little differently, not because some of us are better dancers, but because we all put our own unique movement into every step. For example, think about line dancing. Anybody here like to do line dancing? I know we have a few. Yeah, we got about 10 or 12. Okay. Like the electric slide, I think, and some of those. I mean, I haven't done it for years, and to be perfectly honest, I don't do it really well, okay? But I enjoy it, all right? I enjoy it. And every time I go somewhere and it's being done, here's the sequence that I go through. See if this sounds familiar. First of all, I may be out on the floor. I'm not a big dancer, but I will go out on the floor and, you know, sort of dancing and doing the thrashing and that. And I realize that right over there, a movement is starting to form. There's a couple people kind of getting together and they're kind of doing something and I can't tell what it is. Now, at this point, I have a choice. I can leave the dance floor and watch them do what they do. I can go find my own space and continue dancing the way I'm dancing. Or I can join the group and learn something new. So, at this point in my life, not always, but at this point, I join the line. Okay? Now, for the first few rounds, I am completely, capitalized completely, out of step. I'm turning the wrong way. I'm trying not to get run over. That's number one. But I'm watching. I'm watching people who know what they're doing. And I'm paying attention. And pretty soon, I'm kind of sort of starting to get the hang of it. And before you know it, I'm actually doing it. Okay, I'm doing the steps. Not well, but I'm doing them enough. I'm sort of turning in the right direction, you know, when everybody else does. I'm keeping up with the music. But then that's when something really interesting happens, especially if alcohol is involved. I start adding my own little movements, you know. You know, this kind of little clap here and there, you know, white guy overbite kind of thing like that, you know, doing all this kind of stuff. You know, maybe a little spin, maybe a little shuffle, this kind of stuff. And everybody else is adding theirs, and some of them actually know what they're doing, and some of them are pretty amazing. And by the end of the song, even though we're all doing the same dance, we're all doing the same line dance, moving together in the same direction, each one of us is doing it in our own unique way. It's really cool. If you watch it on YouTube, some of these, you notice everybody's the same, but everybody's different. So I wonder why the world can't be like that, can't be more like that, okay? I mean, every so often I encounter someone who is not dancing in their life, and you know what I mean, either literally or figuratively, because they're waiting for someone to ask them. They're not dancing because they're waiting for someone to ask them. And that's kind of sad. I have met people who write music and songs, excuse me, that no one has ever heard except them. I know people who have written books and short stories and no one has read them except them. I know people who have brilliant business ideas, amazing inventions, fantastic abilities that never make it out of their own home, out of their own home. All because they believe, for some foolish reason, that their truly unique talent or skill is not important enough for them to take it out into the world and share it with those who may or may not find it interesting. What they fail to realize is, even if no one likes what they're doing or the idea they have or the book or the song or whatever it is, it's still important that they bring it out, not for the world's benefit, but for theirs. It's important that they step out onto the dance floor and do their own dance to their own music, not so other people can see what they can do, but so they can see what they can do. So they can start to know themselves better. Otherwise, they're never going to know. You see, the universe is constantly inviting us to come out and play. Okay, life is always asking us to dance, and we can even choose the music. That's the great part of it. All we have to do is say yes, and the party begins, wherever we happen to be. Now, unfortunately, for some of us, probably none of you guys, but people out there, the automatic answer to all of the cosmic opportunities and requests that we're being given is, oh, no, no thank you. No thank you. We go through life telling ourselves and the universe and everybody else, oh, no, 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 I don't dance. I don't sing, you know. I'm not interested in a relationship. You know, I'm okay by myself. This job is sort of okay. I don't want anything too challenging. It's got a retirement in only 20 more years, this kind of stuff, you know. And as a result, every time that we say no, our world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Okay? Smaller and smaller. For whatever reason, just like the wallflowers, whatever, we decide that we deserve very little from life, and that's exactly what we get. Exactly what we get. It's no wonder that the master teacher Jesus once said, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. There are so many metaphors in that one statement, like children, what is the kingdom of heaven, all those things. He meant that unless we become like little children, we're never going to really live life the way it's meant to be lived, because children make up their own dance. They don't even need music. And they don't care what they look like. None of them, okay? They don't care if they look silly. They'll do it in front of anybody. Children believe that they deserve and that they can have and that they can do anything. Absolutely anything. Or at least they believe it until we stifle their belief with our criticism, ridicule, disapproval, just like the world did to us. We don't do it because we're mean. We did it because that's what happened to us. You know, at some point, usually early adolescence, many of us became very concerned about how we look and even more concerned about how other people thought we looked, all right? So somehow we went from being these totally self-confident, beautiful, and comfortable with ourselves children to being insecure, self-conscious, and self-critical as teenagers. At some point, that shift happened. And in the process of doing that, we lost something very, very precious. We lost at least a part of our ability to feel complete and unconditional joy simply in being alive. Simply in being alive. We traded it away in exchange for a positive opinion bestowed upon us reluctantly by a very shallow world that, as far as I can tell, doesn't know how to enjoy itself very well either. And that's sad too. You see, choosing to dance, which means choosing to say yes to life, shows our willingness to do the things we love without anyone else's permission or approval. But before we can do the things we love, there's something else we have to do first. Want to know what it is? Okay, I'll tell you what it is. Here we go. At some point, all right, and the earlier the better, we have to figure out what it is we love to do. Very simple. We have to figure out what it is we love to do. And if we don't know how to go about finding what that is, and some people are in that situation, we may have to try a few things that we aren't very good at, or maybe do some things where we look a little silly, at least while we're learning. We may have to make that stretch. We may have to try dancing or singing or painting, right, Lynn? And a few other painters we have here. Or playing the ukulele. A friend of mine did that. Okay, talk about not wanting to look silly. He looked silly even when he was good at it. It was kind of funny. All right? We may have to try a different kind of job that uses a different skill set. We may have to date different people than the ones we've been dating for so many years. Same person with a different face. A lot of people, you know. We might have to talk to our partner or spouse about making some changes in our relationship so we can enjoy it together, like dancing, all right? We may have to take care of our body differently to start doing some different things. But we can't do any of those things very well if we're worried about what everybody else is going to think or say while we're doing it. I mean, we can always find an excuse not to do something. There are always excuses not to dance, not to play, and not to love. We can always find excuses. And there are also always plenty of people around who are all too willing to tell us why we should or shouldn't live our life a certain way. But something we need to get very clear about is that God, however you experience God, doesn't care how we look. God doesn't care what we look like when we dance or sound like when we sing. Thank God. Especially when I'm in the shower singing, okay? You see, contrary to many of our initial religious training, God is not a person that tells us what to do and what not to do. God is the feeling that we have when we express ourselves completely from within. Completely from within. God is that inner voice that we hear. We don't exactly hear it with our ears, but we hear it with our heart. We feel it, okay? It's that inner voice that tells us if we're enjoying what we're doing or if we're not. And the key word there is inner, okay? If we feel afraid or embarrassed to think we're going to fail at something so we don't do it, that isn't God. That's not the feeling. That's our old useless beliefs imposed upon us from the outside, getting in the way of the God that wants to exist in the world as us. Now, the good news is when we finally do step forward through the fear, through the pain, through the chatter and all this kind of stuff, coming from people who don't know us and don't understand us, the answers that we're seeking become much more clear. they become much more clear. We begin to receive useful guidance from within in voices that we don't hear with our ears. Once again, we hear with our heart. Because there's something inside of us that insists upon making itself known, not to the world, but to us. But to us, okay? And that something is who and what we really are, trying to break through the illusion of who we think we are or who other people have told us we are. You see, we are the dancer, we are the singer, we are the musician, we are the music, we are the song, we are the dance in terms of life. We are every bit of it, okay? And until we realize that, we'll never be able to live the kind of life that we were meant to live. So, this week, I want you to do something, okay? Everybody promise before I tell you? Okay, nobody. All right. You don't trust me. That's okay. I want you to do this not for me, but for yourself, okay? Between now and next week, I want you to do something that you really and truly love to do that you haven't done in a while. And I'll let you figure out what a while means, okay? It could be something small, but it could also be something big, all right? I want you to do something that excites you. And if you can't do it right now, at least start planning it and make a commitment to do it very, very soon. If it requires travel, like going to Paris or Rome or wherever you want to go, at least buy a ticket or make a reservation, all right? If it requires time that you don't think you have, cancel something you don't love doing. That's a big one, okay? Play hooky from work if you have to. All right? If it takes money, spend a little of your hard-earned savings because they're not going to matter if you die tomorrow. Okay? Spend a little bit of it, all right? If it'd be more fun with another person, are you ready? Ask somebody. And if they say no, ask somebody else. Okay? It ain't that hard. Go dancing somewhere where no one else is dancing. You want a poster child for this talk? Baton Bob. Okay? All right? Absolutely perfect. All right? I passed him 2 days ago. I'm on my way to getting a haircut. Sing your favorite song in the middle of Piedmont Park. Go out in the meadow and just sing it out loud. Turn up the volume of your stereo at home and shake your booty even if nobody's watching. Okay? You can do that stuff. Like the old saying goes, dance like nobody's watching and sing like nobody's listening. Okay? And when you do, notice how it feels. Notice how it feels. And keep that feeling. Don't just say, oh yeah, fine, and let it go away. Keep that feeling. And remember how to find it when you need it. Because someday you will. Someday you will. Someday soon, someone's going to look at you while you're daring to try something, and they're going to shake their head with disapproval. And when they do, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I want you to walk up to them and look them in the eye and ask them to dance, because that's probably just what they need. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is, and so it is. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a few moments for ourselves. Take whatever ideas resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. Life is a joyful experience, whether we are living it that way or not. We have the power to choose how we live our life, how to express joy, how to express love, how to express peace and kindness and compassion and all the beautiful emotions that allow us to resonate with other people. We have the power to choose where we go, what we do, how we do it. That power to choose is a divine gift. We have the power to think what we want to think about anything we want to think about. We have the power to be happy in the midst of great sorrow. We have the power to choose peace in the center of chaos. We have the power to choose love in a world that so often embraces hate. And by the power of our choice, we expand our footprint. We expand our effect upon the world. We become a calming experience to others. We become a peaceful experience to others. We become a loving presence to others. We can do this at home with our own consciousness. We can do it at work. We can do it while driving on the highways of Atlanta. We can do it while watching the news. We can choose to know something better. We do not get caught up in the false ideas that so many people believe in, that so many people try to force upon us as the truth, because we know a greater truth. We know the truth that life is a gift. It is a wonderful, precious, positive gift. And death has no power over it. So we choose to live each moment, not only allowing ourselves to live life in the greatest possible way, but creating a space for everyone around us to do the same. And as all of us together begin to feel more and more free to be who we are, we become something much greater together. So we accept that in this moment, we are creating a better world and a better life for everyone. We accept that we are improving the climate, that we are improving the economy, that we are improving relationships between countries and races, between all these different people who seem to be so occupied in making everyone like them. We refuse to become like them, but we also accept them for who they are. This is the power we have. This is the balance we bring to the world, and we are grateful. We are grateful for this awareness. We're grateful for the opportunity to do this in every single part of our life, and we are grateful for the way this law works to transform the world in greater and greater ways. We use this awareness to transcend the violence and the anger and the hatred that we know is slowly being defeated, not by greater powers, but by a power of love that slowly replaces it in the world. This is the direction each one of us chooses to move and the direction we take everyone around us with us. Knowing this, we accept this truth as our own. We embrace it and we release it into consciousness, letting it be so from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.